Tell Sonny we waiting. Outside, meet us at Dine House. Around the block, meet at Dion House. Have him back at his crib or before my dudes find out. Cause Lord knows nothing gets past Miss Jones like before. When she smelled marijuana on our clothes, marijuana on my coat. Told me like, son, you gotta go. Told me like, show respect when in my home.
Hello and welcome to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks, AFC North lead writer for BleacherReport.com and pro football focused fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
What's happening?
We're a month away from training camps kicking off in the NFL. That's what's happening.
Don't tease me.
1 month. 1 month till camp.
I don't believe you.
It's happening. It's happening.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Basically, the thing is now that all the mini camps are over and, you know, we're a month away from training camp, now is the tense time where coaches are wringing their hands, hoping that their players are not getting into any trouble and everybody reports to camp. Nobody has some mysterious basketball injury or a new, you know, arrest charge to their names. So
right.
Here's to a calm, clean month between now and training camp.
Unless you're Johnny Football, in which case
you're going to be followed wherever you go. It doesn't matter.
Anything you do is going to be criticized and scrutinized.
Of course. So our guest this week, as we are continuing on our divisional previews here around the league, is going to be Zach Cruz. He is the NFC North lead writer for Bleacher Report. And, of course, he's here to talk about the NFC North.
I would hope so.
So it's the Bears, Packers, Lions, and Vikings 2014 divisional preview coming up here on the F-Ball podcast shortly. But, you know, there's a couple items of news. Obviously, it's a slow time of year for NFL news. But there are two things to touch on briefly. One being Miami Dolphins center Mike Pouncey suffering a torn labrum in practices earlier this month. And now he's getting hip surgery to repair it, and he's expected to miss about 3 months. So he wouldn't likely be ready till the very end of September or early October.
That's not good news.
That's
for the
not good news for the Dolphins. Obviously, the Dolphins, we all know about their collective kind of issues on offensive line. You know, losing, of course, Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito last year because Richie Incognito is a jerk.
Is Richie Incognito.
Yeah, and, you know, and Mike Pouncey obviously being the anchor of that offensive line, you know, the improvements that they've tried to make this offseason kind of take a significant step backwards without Pouncey as their center.
True.
Because another Pouncey, if you recall, his brother Marquise, who is the Steelers center, tore his ACL and MCL in week one, and it took a while for the Steelers to kind of really recover and find a, you know, find a center that worked, that being Fernando Velasco. So, you know, it might be a tough first month of the season for the Dolphins when it comes to the offense, keeping Ryan Tannehill protected and of course trying to run the ball.
The center's, you know, arguably the most important position on the offensive line. I mean, everybody knows about the left tackles, and they get paid the most money, but the centers is really, they're kind of like the quarterback of the offensive line, and so it's extra damaging when you lose that kind of guy, you know, a guy that should be leading that unit, and they're trying to, you know, improve and make their way, and they lose a guy like that, so yeah, extra bad.
Something good kind of happened, though. There's a revised concussion settlement. If you recall, last summer they came to an agreement for $765 million in funds and $675 of that going towards retired players who have suffered brain injuries and other maladies of the brain as a result of playing football. Mm-hmm. When it happened, the judge on the case, Judge Anita Brody, she said that it wasn't enough money. That's not enough money to sustain this player fund for as many players that as are affected have been affected by this, you know, the brain injuries and all of that, the concussions, multiple concussions. So they agreed to uncapped funds. So there is an unlimited amount of money that they're going to put into this program. They're going to look at it after 10 years, see how many players they've helped and kind of, you know, be able to kind of have a more exact figure of how much
reassess.
Money they're going to be spending on the whole. It needs approval, even though both sides have agreed there has to be this approval process. So this will take effect later in the year, it's expected. But it's good because, you know, you look at how much money the NFL brings in on a yearly basis, billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And you look at all of these lives that have been affected by the NFL, you know, effectively covering up how dangerous concussions are in the short and long terms. And you say, okay, 765.
Kind of like the least you can do.
It's kind of, you know, it's a lot of money. I mean, geez, if I had $765 million. But, you know, when you're talking about this league that makes billions of dollars a year, has a lot of liability at stake here with what they've done with these players, they can easily afford, you know.
Plus they subsidize
two,
it with
3 billion
the player
if they need to.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're subsidizing it with the player fines.
Oh yeah, that's your big conspiracy theory. They're subsidizing with player fines.
Sorry.
But yeah, I mean, you know, that's good because I absolutely, of course, agree with Judge Brody and what she said last year that that's not enough money to sustain the number of players that are going to need, you know. Going to need a cut of this fund,
right?
So, I mean, it's a step in a direction that seems right. I mean, there's a lot more issues regarding concussions in the NFL, both past and present, that still need to be, you know, kind of cleaned up. But this is a step.
No, it's progress. So
it's a progress on the progress made last year, which I'm happy about that. That's an uncapped fund. So
yeah, exactly.
All right, well, we are going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with the NFC North preview with Zach Cruz from Bleacher Report right here on the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Don't go anywhere.
Please don't go anywhere.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Didn't think I was a bad influence on her son, but she probably thought different if I asked her. Only had to skip a couple times out of class, but Sonny had mom and dad. We're continuing our divisional previews this week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. We're moving on to the NFC North. So we brought on NFC North lead writer for Bleacher Report, Zach Cruz, to talk about the Bears, Packers, Lions, and Vikings.
How's it going, Zach?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
All right.
We're doing all right. We're about a month out from training camps beginning, so...
We're talking about football. That's a good thing.
We're creeping ever closer to the start of yet a new NFL season.
Yeah, can't wait for real football, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, I'm excited for the match tomorrow, but it would be cooler if it was, like, American football.
we were checking out some arena the other day, and, like... That it, you know, they're wearing helmets and kind of running formations, and you know, it almost looks like football. It's, you know, it's a good teaser at this time of year.
And the CFL starts this week too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think tomorrow or Friday, I think, is the kickoff to the Canadian football season. So I'll probably watch some of that because it's inevitably on every once in a while. Heading back into NFL football. I guess we'll start with the Chicago Bears because, you know, we got that CFL connection there with head coach Mark Trestman.
Segue.
See? do you see some magic being made here between Jay Cutler and Mark Trestman, especially, you know, his ability to really work with quarterbacks and prove them, and then the fact that, of course, Cutler has that tandem of Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey making things easier for him. So what are you seeing for the Trestman-Cutler relationship in its second year?
I see a lot of big things. You know, that first year, I saw a lot of improvement out of Jay Cutler. He, you know, he's quicker with his decision-making. You know, he got a better offensive line. Alshon Jeffrey obviously broke out quite a bit for him. But, you know, I think Trestman is just that calming influence on him. He wasn't forcing things as much. You know, I do think a big thing is for him to be healthy. I know Mark Trestman has said that a couple times already this offseason, that they just need to keep this guy healthy because you can't call on a magic backup like Josh McCown coming around. He's obviously down in Tampa Bay now. So I think keeping Jay Cutler healthy, that's object number one. If he plays 16 games, I think this offense is going to score a lot of points.
The question, though, is whether or not that defense will again ruin the offense like it did so many times last year. Do you think that the Bears are going to see a significant turnaround, both with their ability to rush the passer and, of course, in coverage?
I love what they did on the defensive line. I think Lamar Houston, Jared Allen, those are big-time pickups. Willie Young, I think he's going to be a really underrated guy in passing situations. I'm still a little iffy with their safeties. I know they brought Adrian Wilson in, but I just wrote today that I wouldn't expect much from him. He's 34 and coming off a big injury, an Achilles injury, which, there really hasn't been a guy in the last 10 to 15 years at his age to come back from that injury. So, I'm a little worried about the safeties. I think Kyle Fuller and the cornerbacks are going to be pretty good. They're a little iffy at linebacker. They're doing a lot of switching and a lot of, package stuff at the linebackers, but I really like their defensive line. So, I can't imagine they're going to be as bad last year, especially against the run, and I do think they are going to rush the passer a lot better.
Yeah, the thing with Ryan Mundy, he's just kind of the guy you get stuck with when you're hard up for safety depth. He's a guy who started great. Let's bring him in. But he spent time with the Pittsburgh Steelers, was a liability there when he had to sub in because of injuries. Spent last year with the Giants, not so good. And so I always worry for any team secondary that is employing Ryan Mundy in a starting capacity. That concerns me quite a bit.
Yeah, I think he'd be a great backup for this team. But, if he's pushed into a starter role, I think the safety tandem is going to be, pretty in question again this year, unfortunately.
Moving on to the Green Bay Packers, obviously we – last week, Jonathan Franklin had to retire from the NFL due to his pretty serious neck injury that he suffered last season. They have Eddie Lacy. They're not really hurting for running back depth, at least. It just seems more like this is an extraordinarily unfortunate situation for a real promising guy like Franklin.
Yeah, it was just terrible. You really feel for the guy because he put a lot into it. And like you said, the Packers are not hurting at running back. They have Eddie Lacy. They brought back James Starks, who was really good as their backup last year. And even in the Franklin role, they have a Dwan Harris, who is coming back from a knee injury. So they're good at running back, but it's just a sad story. It really is. There's really no other way to put it.
So the passing offense, it's kind of been morphing a little bit because the receiving core for the Packers are, it's just so much younger. Obviously, things are up in the air with Jermichael Finley. Randall Cobb, is kind of the most senior guy on that receiving core now. So what do you see, happening with Aaron Rodgers and these young receivers? Obviously, he's an all-world quarterback, so he can help, make these receivers better. But, they're still young, and it's a tough position to really master. So what do you see, happening with that passing offense and these young guys?
I think there might be a little time there that they need to iron out some stuff, especially with Davante Adams, who I think is gonna play some snaps. But he still has Jordy Nelson, who I think he has more trust in than any receiver he's ever played with, and I think that's gonna really help. Randall Cobb is such a nice security blanket underneath, playing mm-hmm. the spot. I think Jared Boykin is actually a guy that we're gonna be a little surprised about because you talk a lot about Davante Adams, Aberdares, these guys they drafted, but Boykin had a really good last year when he had to step up and play when Cobb got injured. So, like you said, Rodgers is going to make these receivers no matter what. He's a great quarterback. He's going to get the ball to him. But, I could see a little period early on where, teams are scheming to take away Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, and the Packers struggle a little bit throwing the football. But I will say they're going to run the football this year, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're going to want to throw still, but this is going to be a team that runs the football, and I'd expect a big year out of Eddie Lacy.
Yeah, I think this is going to be about as balanced as we've seen the Packers offense in a minute. Let me jump in here, though. I got a question about the defensive side of the ball there. They picked up Julius Peppers. How is he going to fit into that defense? They're running a 3-4 up there, right?
Yeah, they're running a 3-4, and I think they want to do a lot of things with him. I think he's going to be a stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker, and I think that's going to be where he plays the majority of his snaps. But they, mm-hmm. They want to move him down to defensive end on some snaps. They want to move him to interior rusher on some snaps. I think, that Mike McCarthy and Dom Capers has preached all offseason that they want to get more multiple. They want to they want to tone down the schemes, but they want to get more multiple. And I think Julius Peppers is going to be a big part of that. He can play all over that defense, really, when they're rushing the passer. So I don't know how much they're going to get out of him because he is an older player. He's on the decline. I don't think they can play him 800, 900 snaps. But, you know, he's a guy that they can move around and that Dom Capers will like using.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Capers use that new toy of his.
The new slightly used toy.
Slightly used toy.
Yes.
With the Detroit Lions, you know, they got a few changes. Obviously, you know, Jim Caldwell is the new head coach. You know, the offense under Joe Lombardi, his effect. What do you see the effect of Lombardi on the offense and what Jim Caldwell brings to the table to this Lions team that they didn't have with Jim Schwartz?
I think for Lions fans, you want Jim Caldwell to bring a little calming influence. This has been a rambunctious sideline for way too long under Jim Schwartz. I think Jim Caldwell, I don't think there's a more even-keeled coach in all of NFL than Jim Caldwell. So I think he's going to bring some of that. Lombardi, I would think that he's going to bring a lot of what the Saints did down in New Orleans with Drew Brees. And, you know, they drafted Eric Ebron, who I think they're going to use a lot like Jimmy Graham. You know, they have a lot of weapons. They got two really good running backs. Lombardi's going to spread people out, and he's going to run the football too. So, you know, I really like what they did with Caldwell. I think that's a perfect coach for this team right now. And I think Lombardi's really going to shine in a new role as offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see it. I don't hide the fact that I happen to be a Lions fan on this podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely excited to see where Lombardi can take the offense, because I think that they had so many pieces there and they were like ready to take that next step, it seemed, for the last couple years, and it just kind of petered out. So
This is a team that has a lot of pieces that you want for a winner. You know, you have a franchise quarterback, you have a once in a generation receiver, you now have a bunch of really good tight ends, you have a defensive line that can rush the passer. So, you know, those are ingredients of a lot of good teams that you see playing in the playoffs. If they can just even stuff out, get more consistent, which I think Jim Caldwell will help, I think this is a potential playoff team.
Yeah, I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping they don't, like, Lions it up somehow. But anyway, let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball there, because, you know, they parted ways with Chris Houston from their side, reportedly related to his injuries, and that they just didn't think he was going to be, one, and back in time, and two, what he used to be or anything like that. I don't know. You know, it's hard to ever – you know, completely
yeah.
trust that.
Yeah,
you know?
Trust but the decision making there.
Especially when they were assigning Ebron the same day. But how do you see that that defensive backfield shaping up now that he's out of the picture and they got Darius Slay and some guys, I think.
Some guys.
I think that's a good word to put it. I think it's still a question mark. I think Darius Slay is a candidate to make a big second, you know, year jump. I thought he struggled a lot early on, but he really came on late. You know, Bill Bentley, he's, you know, been an up-and-down guy. I really like Nevin Lawson. He's smaller, but I think he's going to be able to play the slot right away. You know, so they have some pieces. I think Cassius Vaughn might come in and play some snaps, and Rashawn Mathis is a veteran. So, you know, they have a bunch of guys there. I never liked the idea when they were reported to be going after Brian Flowers. I didn't think Brandon Flowers. I didn't think that was a good fit for them. You know, I think they have a bunch of young guys that they really do like. So, cornerback is in a strong spot for him right now, but I could see it developing, you know, especially that pass rush. That's, you know, the best friend of a young secondary, and they have some talent there. So, it's a question mark now, but I could see it being fine as the season progresses.
I'm most hopeful that it's the defense now being headed up by Austin, and, you know, that was where he was coaching in Baltimore, was the secondary. So, I'm just, you know, cross my fingers on that.
Yeah, I mean, he comes from building a very nice secondary
exactly.
in Baltimore.
So hopefully he sees something in the
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, maybe
that
some
they
of
have.
The Aussie knew some talent, like evaluation rubbed off on him, and he's
but
got
I'm,
some
but
guys.
But I'm the eternal optimist fan, so
you have to be.
I will say, you know, Austin's going to make these corners press, so it's going to be a more aggressive defense at least.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works.
And finally, the Minnesota Vikings. I was looking at some stuff from OTAs and minicamp and whatnot, and Mike Zimmer had alluded to a quarterback competition, but it doesn't look like it's one that Christian Ponder is really in. It seems to be between Teddy Bridgewater and Matt Castle. Why do you see this quarterback situation shaking out once we get to week one for the Vikings?
Yeah, they're kind of advertising this as a three-man race, but it's pretty clearly between Teddy Bridgewater and Matt Castle. You know, I kind of like the way they're going about this. As a Seattle Seahawks 2012 feel to it, I just wrote about that today. Mm-hmm. You know, they're keeping this open. They're not just giving the job to the veteran, and they're not taking the rookie out of it. So I think a lot of this is going to be determined once August finally rolls around. Teddy has kept his name in the ring, which is all he really could do at this point. I think if he blows the doors off in preseason, I don't think there's any way that the Vikings can keep him off the field. You know, it has that Russell Wilson feel. If he's good in the preseason, why not play him?
Because,
right. You know, the Vikings have pieces around them on offense. You know, Patterson, Jennings, Kyle Rudolph, they have some receivers. Obviously, one of the best running backs in the game. And a good offensive line, too. So I think it's a situation where a rookie could come in and succeed right away.
Yeah, speaking of that certain running back that they have, I was reading something the other day referencing how he's going to be catching the ball a lot more in Norv's offense. Is that
Norv?
Norv's offense. is that something you've heard as well?
Yeah, I think he's going to be catching a lot more passes. I think they want to maybe reduce his workload as a runner, you know, bang him inside the tackles. I think they want to try and get him out in space. North Turner has said that a lot this offseason, that they want to get Peterson in space as much as possible. So, yeah, I would expect him to catch a lot more passes. They're going to use the running back a lot more in the running game than they have in the past, obviously, with North Turner's offense.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, if this works out well, it makes you wonder why they haven't thrown him more over the years, because, you know, obviously he's extra dangerous.
Some coordinators are just throwing to running backs adverse. They just don't like to do it. Just like, you know, some guys... You know, you saw it in Chicago with the Greg Olsen situation. Mike Martz comes in. He doesn't like throwing to tight ends, so what do you need a guy like Greg Olsen for? Dumb.
We saw how that worked out.
Yeah, the Vikings threw to Peterson a little bit when he was younger, and they had, you know, Childress and Favre there, but, mm-hmm. you know, right. Bill Musgrave was completely anti-throw to the running back. So, yeah, this would be a big change.
Another big change is of course, at head coach Mike Zimmer, who comes in as – former Cincinnati Bengals defensive coordinator. I'm really excited about this. I was really excited when he was going out and taking head coaching interviews. I was really excited when he took the Vikings job, because I think that Zimmer has a lot of potential to be a very successful head coach in the NFL, because he's a good leader, he's innovative, he's intelligent, and he's got a great attitude. He's got that total package that you'd want to see in a head coach. You know, how are the players, and how's everybody kind of responding to this new style of coach that they have now with Mike Zimmer?
You know, I live in Minneapolis, and just about everyone I talk to up here is just in love with Mike Zimmer already. Maybe that's how it is always with a new coach in a new town. But, you know, they like you said, they love his attitude. They like that he's a straight shooter. When he talks to the media, he's not giving any BS. He's telling them what's on his mind. And I think people have really, you know, hung on to that. They really like that. So I think he's a perfect guy for this job, really. They needed help on defense. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going to be a great quarterback guy, but they brought in North Turner. So it's a really good marriage. I think all the players have raved about him so far, how he's running practices. So, and everyone up here, like I said, in Minneapolis is just in love with this guy. So, yeah, I think it's a really good fit. I'm glad he finally got his chance, because he really did deserve it.
Yeah, I think of the two Bengals coordinators, obviously the one being Jay Gruden, who's the head coach in Washington now. I think that Zimmer, of those two, I think is going to by far have a lot more success. I think that also he's also in the better situation to be a head coach in Minnesota for the Vikings than dealing with the Dan Snyder kind of meddling and ways that he handles money and all that fun stuff. So I'm excited for Zimmer. It's a great opportunity for him, and I'm really curious to see how he builds out that defense, because one thing that he really likes to do is heavily rotate, especially on defensive line. So I'm curious to see how that translates with the players that have already been in place in Minnesota and how they can adapt to that kind of new style of a 4-3.
Yeah, I don't think he ever had elite talent on defense in Cincinnati. Maybe you disagree with that, but
I'll disagree with a few. Yes, there's a couple guys.
But there's a couple of elite guys. You know, Geno Atkins. You know, they have some guys, but this Vikings defense had some guys too. Everson Griffin's a good player. You know, they've done a good job bringing in guys. Captain Munderland. So this isn't a defense that is void of talent. And I think obviously there's better people in the league that can take more or less on defense than Mike Zimmer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were a big fan of the
Captain Munderland.
We were a big fan of the Captain Munderland signing. We made a move to pick him up on our dynasty team. So.
Yeah, he feels like the next coming Antoine Winfield, really, in Minnesota. So yeah, I think that's a great pickup for him.
Yeah, he's really talented, kind of underrated, but he had a really nice year last year for the Panthers. So I expect good things out of Captain Munderland this year, especially in Zimmer's defense, because you know he's known for that front seven, but he's really good at amassing talent at cornerback and safety as well. So and finding the right guys to work in coverage. So I'm excited for that too.
Yeah, and one guy I watched, Xavier Rhodes. I think he is going to make a huge jump here in the second year. He was really good down the stretch. He had some really nice games covering some of the bigger receivers in the NFC North. So I'd expect him to take a big jump next year under Zimmer.
So before we let you go here, one question then remains. Which team, and I know we're still in June, which team do you think is going to end up winning the NFC North division this year? And do you see, you know, multiple teams from this division potentially reaching the postseason this year?
You know, I got that question of who's going to win the NFC North this past weekend, and I didn't really have a good answer. I have no idea, first of all. I think the most likely team to win it is probably going to be the Packers, and I think the most likely team to finish last is still probably the Vikings. The Packers, you know, they have the best quarterback. The Vikings have the most uncertainty at quarterback, so that's how I'd tentatively order them, Lions, Bears, somewhere 2-3. But also, I could see this division finishing any type of ways. I think the Lions and Bears can both easily win this, and it's a long shot, but teams go last to first all the time. And, you know, if Teddy Bridgewater is better than advertised and Zimmer can get that defense turned around, the Vikings have a decent-looking schedule, and I think they could surprise. Honestly, I think all four of these teams could make a run at the playoffs next year.
Yeah, this division has been pretty good, but pretty competitive over the last few seasons. So I'm with you. You could look at any of these teams, especially if the Vikings turn things around and say, you know, any of these four could win this division. Any of these four could go to the playoffs in a best-case scenario.
I think it'd still be a surprise if the Vikings were, you know, a 10-6 team. But, you know, who knows? Just who knows? And it'll all come down to the quarterbacks, most likely. If Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, you know, the Packers are probably a 10 or 11 win team. You know, if Matthew Stafford turns things around, I could see the Lions being a 10 or 11 win team. And the Bears are stacked on offense, and I think they're coming around in defense. So maybe it's just the internal optimism of June, but I really like all four of these teams right now.
Every team will win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yes. That's the safe answer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So before we let you go, why don't you let our listeners know where they can find your work on the internet and so forth?
Well, you can find it right on Bleacher Report. Look up Zach Cruz. I'm the NFC North lead writer. Or you can find me on Cheesehead TV if you're a Packer fan. I know that's not going to appeal to everyone, but those are the two spots that are right. Those are the two spots that are right.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Zach. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us here at the F-Ball Podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
All right, have a good one. You're the only talent out of group, only one that got potential to get on. So we make sure Sonny make his own. Just standing on stage with him like my nigga, we own. Big thanks to Zach Cruz, the NFC North lead writer for Bleacher Report, for joining us and helping us out with our NFC North divisional preview here at the F-Ball Podcast.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Nice and, you know, it was a quick hitter. But I think we covered a lot. It was very thorough for a short period of time.
You got to handle his diplomatic optimism here in June by saying, you know,
they're all
contenders right now, which I completely get. You know, doing the same thing with AFC North, it's really hard right now to pick any of those teams.
Well, yeah, because all the news is pretty much good news coming
out.
It's
all good news.
Most of the teams.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Then, like, you know,
except the Titans.
No comment.
So, of course, before we go, we have to read from the book of Bradshaw. So it's only a game, the memoir written by Steelers Hall of Fame quarterback Terry Bradshaw.
Of course.
Initially, just about everything new we tried received some criticism, particularly the inside football segment on our field. Because this segment has to be carefully choreographed and is planned as long as 30, 40 seconds in advance, the fact that there are weeks that we don't even know what we're going to talk about until we're standing right there. What do you want to talk about this week, Howie? I don't know, Terry. What do you want to talk about? If we have a guest on the show, we definitely want him. The one guest I do remember very well was the late Ray Nitschke, the Hall of Fame middle linebacker from Vince Lombardi's Green Bay Packers. Nitschke had established himself as one of the toughest players in football when Mean Joe Green was still just sort of cranky. Nitschke was so tough when he played that one of his own teammates used to complain that in practice, he was just liable to make you try to eat a bone. Lombardi used to watch practice from a raised wooden tower. One day, the tower fell over and hit Nitschke in the head, driving a bolt into his helmet. Supposedly, when Lombardi found out who had been hit, he sighed in relief and ordered everybody back to practice. On our little field, we decided Ray should demonstrate how he would break through the offensive line to get to the quarterback. I lined up at quarterback, and I believe my close friend Jeff Quinn, a former pro football player who is our permanent stand-in, was the center. As we were lining up, I mentioned casually to Nitschke, "Be honest about it, Ray. You couldn't play effectively in today's game, could you?" Next is suggesting to my soon-to-be ex-wife that we go parasailing. This was truly one of the sillier things I've ever said. We were on national television, and I was telling a man known for his pride that he wasn't a good enough player. "What are you talking about?" he asked. "Well, seriously now. The players are bigger and faster now than they were when you were playing, right? It's a whole different game." Ray smiled. "Come on, I'll show you what I would do." At least I thought he was smiling. So we lined up. "Down," I yelled. "Hold it a second." Ray said, standing up, "Hold on, let me take my glasses off." So he took off his glasses and handed them to a crew member. "Set," I said. "That's good. I thought he's going along with my little joke." "Whoa, whoa," Ray interrupted. "Just let me take my coat off right now." So he took off his coat and handed it to the stagehand. It was probably right about then that I began to wonder if both of us knew that I had been joking. It was like a switch had turned on in him. His eyes were cold, and he was locked on me. "Hut one," I said. "Wait now," Ray said. "Just let me put my watch over there, and then I'm going to tear your head off." He took off his watch. "Hut one," I repeated. I looked over at him. It looked to me like he was serious. Was I really going to let him intimidate me on national television? You bet I was. "Time out," I said, making a T sign with my two hands. "We're going to pause right here for a commercial."
Terry.
Oh,
that was
Terry,
a good one. Like
that was
that
a good
story.
One. That's a nice little story.
Yeah.
Nice little story from Terry Bradshaw. So that nice little story from Terry Bradshaw, however, means we have now reached the end of this week's F-Ball NFL
Alas.
Podcast.
We are here.
We have
concluded, or we are soon to conclude.
Yes. We may or may not have a show next week. It's dependent, of course, because there is a July 4th holiday on Friday, and it depends on our ability to get a guest to continue on our divisional preview series. So TBD, maybe next week, maybe the following Wednesday.
We'll let you know.
We'll let you know.
For certain.
Of course. So that concludes this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Again, big thank you to Zach Cruz, NFC North lead writer for Bleacher Report. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about the NFC North. I'm Andrea Hengst. I'm AFC North lead writer at Bleacher Report, and I write about fantasy football as well for Pro Football Focus. You can find me, Bleacher Report, just search my name, Andrea Hengst. You can find me on, of course, through the TeamStream app. ProFootballFocus.com or on Twitter at FBall_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian. I am the executive producer and co-host
of this
podcast. All right, how about just regular producer? Producer just work for you? Is that okay?
I don't know what you're executing of on.
Well, you know, there is certainly no executive producer above me. So
I'll let you have. Okay, fine. Executive producer of the F-Ball NFL podcast, Brian.
And co-host.
And co-host.
And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, everyone. We'll either be here next week or we won't. But either way, we'll be back.
If not, enjoy your 4th of July.
Yeah, if not, enjoy your 4th of July. Enjoy your holiday here, you crazy Americans.
Foosball's coming.
It's coming. Soon enough. All right, we'll be back.
Later.
Peace.